Well, as the great Neil Diamond once said, returning to America today!
Eddie Murphy and James Earl Jones were fantastic in that movie.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 306, Returning to America. Complete History of America Abridged premiered almost 20 years ago in 1993, and after an almost 10-year run in London and multiple tours around the U.S. and the world, we are now on our second tour of the special election edition of the script. On last weekend's car trip from Cranston, Rhode Island to Morristown, New Jersey, Reed Martin, Dustin Sullivan, and I talked about what it's like to strap on our tricorn hats once again.
So how long has it been since we've done the Complete History of America Abridged?
Well, we toured it 4 years ago in the prior to the 2008 presidential election.
And when you say we, did that include you and me? I can't remember. I don't think it did.
I did some of those shows. That was mostly Jeff Marlowe, Dustin Sullivan, and Mick Orff.
Really? I wonder if those guys, Mick Orff. Wait, Dustin Sullivan, he's in the back seat.
Oh my God.
How did he get Dustin? There?
I'm in this I did a show.
Wow. What's it been like for you, Dustin? This is now your second tour of the special election edition of the Complete History of America Abridged. Was it just like falling off a log pretty easy, or how's it been?
You know, other than the couple weeks leading up to that one day of rehearsal where I was going through the script on a daily basis to make sure I wasn't going to go crazy. It came back pretty quick, especially once the blocking all came back into place.
Right.
And Lord knows, I mean, I've had 4 years of steeping for Obama, so he is, the depths of that character now are really pretty epic.
Right, yes, your impression continues to be canny.
Yes.
Well, and what's been funny, you know, there's a podcast episode from several years ago called Notes for Dustin. Poor Dustin. He's doing this show with two of the three writers of the script and the directors of the production who like to give him notes in the middle of the show. So we apologize for that. But one thing I realized is some of these notes we're giving you, it's just you learned it in a way that we taught it. We either taught it to you wrong or we didn't explain it to you correctly the first time.
Yeah, there have definitely been a few things where you tell me it's different. I'm like, wait, am I crazy or did I read that in the script wrong? Or
yeah,
some things definitely got locked in pretty early, and it's weird to hear like 4 years later, oh, I was doing it wrong that whole time.
Well, and to your credit, you have not once said to us, are you sure? Because I've been doing this show for almost 4 years now, and I pretty much have it locked.
Yeah, I think if there are ever people to trust, it's the guys who wrote it. So even if you did write it differently before, it's clearly different in your minds now. So
it is different, and where there have been, they keep writing American history, so we keep having to reduce it. What's it been like for you, Reed Martin?
You know, it's like an old friend, somebody who you know very well, you haven't seen him for a long time, and. Yeah, you do the rehearsal, and maybe the first show's a little rusty, but then it just falls into place. I have a relationship with this show that comes back pretty easily. And I think in those 4 years, I think the only, if I'm remembering right, the only other place, there was a tour of Asia, I think, where they performed the America show a couple of years ago, but I wasn't on that tour.
No, that was, I think that was Dominic. Yeah, that was Dominic and Mick and Jeff Marlowe.
Yeah. What's fun to me is, you know, we wrote this show now 20 years ago, and we were up, you know, we updated this year. It's the, you know, the Romney-Obama presidential debates featuring Romney in an empty chair to start with. But just how much of it sort of, it was written 20 years ago, but then it comes into fashion. Like, yeah. When we wrote the line about, we have a vote about what the last sketch is going to be, and Austin wins the popular vote, but I win in the Electoral College. Yeah. Well, that whole Al Gore, George W. Bush thing hadn't happened.
Right.
So 10 years after the show was written, that joke becomes even funnier. And that kind of stuff is great.
Yes, we are so prescient. Again, we wrote this show in 93, premiered it in 93. But the The Daily Show, Jon Stewart took over The Daily Show sort of in 99, and it became the cultural force it became in the 2000s, and then the Boston Herald gave us that great review that the Our America Show is what The Daily Show would be like if it were hosted by the Marx Brothers, which is a fantastic way to describe the show. And finally, you know, 10 years after we wrote it, there became a shorthand way to explain it, which was very nice, so thank you, Jon Stewart.
I just love the smartness of The America Show. Yeah. You know, I think people appreciate the cleverness, and there's things that we don't really belabor, and I'm not even sure if people are consciously aware, but we go through the history of America from the Indians coming from Asia to present day, and we cover each period of history in the most popular media of the time. So it's an Indian folktale. It's the town crier for the revolution. It's Matthew Brady-type photographs for the Civil War. We do a radio show for the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and then we do film noir for the Cold War. We never literally say, this is how we're going to do it.
Right.
And I think people who've seen the show many times, I even think some of the actors, when we forget to point that out, don't notice it. But it's conceived very well, I think.
I think that's true as well. And also, it's written, like all of our shows, it's written as a reaction to the previous show. This was the first show that Reed and I were writers on, and we wrote it with Adam Long, and we wrote it while we were doing 7 shows a week of the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged in London at the Arts Theatre. And, you know, we did that for a year, 50 weeks total, and I think we were all feeling the, holy crap, we're running around 7 shows a week and in tights and working awful hard for these laughs. What would happen if we just wrote something where all we had to do was stand there and say the lines? And that's what we wrote. We wrote smart, funny stuff. Then, after our very first performance, we realized, okay, it needs a little physicality. And we went in and we added that whole final last chase scene at the end of Spade Diamond. And we added the question and answer thing to give it a more improvisatory feel. I remember my brother seeing the American History Show, and he said, it's really good, it's really smart, but what it doesn't have is the sense of you three guys arguing and fighting like you do in the Shakespeare show about how best to cover the topic. And I thought that was a good note. I don't think we fixed it in this show, but I think we sort of more than addressed it in the Bible show and then the next shows.
Yeah. Probably not so much conflict, more agreement about how we're going to... Although there are certainly moments of it. How was it for you coming back to the show?
It was not dissimilar to you. For that month, I was a little bit like you, Dustin. I was kind of going, oh, God, I haven't done this show in a while. Because I don't think I did it 4 years ago. I don't really remember the last time I did it. They all rushed together. And I'm old. Have I told you? I'm just very, very old now. But what was terrific is that, yes, there were a handful of lines and speeches where I went, oh, right, this long speech comes here. Oh, yes. But the minute I got up there, it's been in my bones for almost 20 years now. So it's just, like you say, it's an old friend. It's just there. And I know how it works, and it gets better. And what's fun is that we just keep discovering new opportunities for new jokes. Like the Dustin, your Indian character comes up and says, my people do not care what scientists have to say. And we just threw in, oh, you're from Texas, which is a great shot at Texas. You're welcome, Texas. We're not touring down there to see you for the America show, so the hell with you.
What cracks me up is there's in the World War I scene, there's a two-line exchange, which we probably cut 17 years ago.
Yes.
And when we come back to the show every time, I'm still inclined to do those two lines because that's the recent cut that we made 17 years ago. Stuff like that is very funny. Or just remembering bits, that how they evolved. Or, you know, we used to have a different opening scene for the second act early on, and there were songs that got cut. Yeah. And then we used to have a long bit about just word association in one of the Spade Diamond scenes that got cut. It's all the memories come back of the way the show has evolved.
Well, and it's interesting, that word association thing, we were still doing that when we performed at Lincoln Center in the summer of 93, and we got that Valentine review from Stephen Holden in the New York Times. And he talks about a series of word association games. Well, that word association game is mostly gone now because it just wasn't very funny. But it was a bit that I saw at Second City in 91 or 92 being performed by David Rosowski, a former RSC member and a fantastic improviser, and Stephen Colbert. Before he was right-wing conservative pundit Stephen Colbert. This was a thing where they both played spies in trench coats, and they were reconnecting through some failed mission, and they said, "Well, you can't connect me to that." Yeah, you know, they would say, "I haven't seen you since," and then they would just hold for a beat, and the Second City audiences are trained so well, they know that's their cue to shout out something. And so then they would say, "I haven't seen you since the Super Bowl," or whatever the audience member throws out. So they'd say, "Yo, really? You can't connect me to the Super Bowl." And then they would just improvise connections. Oh, yeah? Super Bowl. Super...
Market.
Yeah.
Yes.
Market town. Yeah. Town and country. Da-da-da-da. And they would bring it back to...
And then they would connect the name?
They would connect the name.
Yeah, that's fun.
It was a fantastic...
But it wasn't scripted.
It wasn't scripted. That's what made the bit so great. You knew that they were flying by the seat of their pants there, and it was just a great bit. So the only remnant of that bit is you're the bastard that invented disco. You can't connect me to disco. Oh, yeah? What's your favorite kind of music? Disco. Gotcha. You know, that's...
But it used to be about 20 lines in there, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was a runner. Yeah. It was a runner in those things. So that was just, you know, that was a great lesson in comedy as well, you know. If it's scripted, it better be really funny.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Rachel Dratch, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Our fall of 2012 tour continues with performances of the special election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged in Chico and Saratoga, California, and Hilton Head, South Carolina. And then we begin our very first national tour of the ultimate Christmas show Abridged. And we take it to Reston, Virginia, Charlotte, North Carolina, Fort Worth, Texas, St. Louis, Missouri, Anchorage, Alaska, and for 3 weeks we'll be at San Diego Repertory Theater in San Diego, California. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
You know what else I love about the America shows? I think of all the shows, we're least slavish to the punchline. Yes. and the big laugh. Is it?
Yes.
We have a point of view. And we have scenes, and it's not, what would I say? I think it's our best reviewed show other than the Shakespeare show in general, historically. And even when we bring it back, it's our best reviewed show. Yeah. Not that the other shows don't get good reviews, but people just love it. And I think it's that thing, that we have points of view, and we're not just desperate to get to the next laugh. We have a point.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. It's in one way why it's the smartest, I think, of the shows. I mean, we were talking about the definition of satire, which I've always thought of as sort of just comedy with a point.
Well, Stephen Colbert was being interviewed by Oprah. I saw this last week, okay. And she said she was talking about satire. He said, "Yeah, it's just satire is parody that's making a point."
Okay, yeah. Parody with a point. Yeah. Yeah, I was always thinking, you know, it because you have a serious theme. That makes you sound satirical, even though the jokes are just as stupid. But there's
a nice little take on it. There's the conspiracy theory of American history. I think that's what we posit in the history of America, that the single bullet that started the American Revolution, the shot heard around the world, kept flying in some way, God knows how.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it gets Abraham Lincoln, it gets John Kennedy, it gets Bobby Kennedy, it gets Martin Luther King. For some reason, it gets Anne Murray of Snowbird fame.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so I think the New York Times review said, you know, we have these rants of like crazy left wing conspiracy theorists, and that's kind of fun.
Well, it is kind of fun, and I think there's a larger point to be made there that we don't make explicitly, but I think it's there. Is that I think people have turned to conspiracy theories for the same reason that people used to turn to religion. People want an explanation. people want to know that there's a reason for something that happened. They want to know who to blame, or they want to know the why. And at least in the 90s, when this show was written, people were turning to conspiracies a lot more. I think there's still a few birthers and 9/11 truthers who are still kind of out there on the fringes, kind of grasping to the last vestiges of sanity and wearing their tinfoil hats. But for the most part.
But we don't judge.
No, but we're not. Yeah, we don't judge.
So, Dustin, what are the most fun parts of the show for you to do? What do you enjoy most about the show?
And I know it's not the beer after the show, because you don't drink.
Sad. No, I mean, I've always loved the Lewis and Clark bit, just because it's to me, that's like the perfect mixture of, like, stupid comedy, but played with, like, very, like, clear intention, and it's... there's just nothing more fun for me.
Well, and it's hard, you know, it's great to hear you say that, because I think it's clear, you think it's clear, but it's clearly not, because I think there have been people who just kind of they don't realize that these jokes are bombing. You know, and both Lewis and Clark realize that the jokes are bombing, and Austin and Dustin realize that the jokes are bombing.
Yeah, well, and then the audience, yeah, the laugh comes not in the immediacy of it, but in the follow-up for every single part of that bit. And I love being able to actually, like, watch and participate with the audience as they kind of have that second step of going, oh, okay, this is why this is hilarious.
Well, and the bad part is, and I've seen one or two of these productions before, is when the actors playing Lewis and Clark apologize. And you can see them going, oh, I know, this is really terrible. Hey, dope, it's supposed to be terrible.
Well, yeah, and instead, your attitude should be, screw you, this is hilarious.
Yes, exactly, right. Yeah. This is, people say, oh, you're being irreverent of Shakespeare or the Bible or America. No. This is a celebration. And a celebration of everything, of the strengths and the weaknesses and the cheese ball old jokes.
And are there parts, Dustin, that it comes up and you go, oh, no, this part?
Well, I kind of have to shut down my brain whenever I do my Obama dance, just because there is a level of shame involved there that I'm not willing to really recognize.
Listen, you made some money last night. That woman was going to give you a couple of singles.
Spectacular, yeah. She full on offered me a dollar. I much respect for that woman.
Dustin made it rain. Do you have parts that you love, that you always look forward to?
Me?
Yeah.
Let's see, do I? Yeah, for different reasons. I always like singing the national anthem because it's very simple and sincere and ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I like the World War I sketch because that's fun. I do like Lewis and Clark, but for me that's a little like, whoa, we're gonna run around now. That's a little more energy than I'm prepared to give. And I do love Spade Diamond. I love just coming, bouncing in and out of that story as the various presidents and oddball characters that I get to play. Also, that has one of my favorite lines in it. And it was a joke that you used to tell, Reed, and I said, we've got to get that into the show. And it's the line about, I wanted to make love to her in the worst way, standing up in a hammock. Yeah. That's a great joke!
That was from Max the Clown on the Red Show in the Clown Alley one day. My two favorite bits are, I love my speech early on about, let's look at this word American, and there's anagrams for American, for George Washington, and for Spiro Agnew, and that's a very fun speech. People are surprised, and that's a lot of fun. I also, when we started, as you know, that I said, oh, we can't possibly do this, was just taking Q&A from the audience, and now you can't shut me up. For some reason, Obama and Romney, well, it's not for some reason, Obama and Romney take questions. For some reason, the audience, we've noticed on this tour, they all have questions for Romney. They don't have a lot of questions for Obama.
Yeah. Well, maybe they're afraid that Obama hasn't showed up to this debate either.
Yeah. The part that I always go, is I play the accordion in this show. Yeah. And as you know, Austin, from playing the keyboard in the Bible show, there's no place to hide. You can't sort of fudge. Yeah. Well, I know basically how this line goes. No, you get it or you don't. So I had Allie bring the accordion over to my house for about a week before we went on a tour to Prussia. Yeah, how do I play the politically correct national anthem, America the Beautiful, Dixie? So that's whenever I get through the end of Dixie, I just sort of go,
You either stick the landing of that accordion or the keyboard, or you don't. Well, and that Q&A section, you know, I have to give a shout out to Gary Rudoran. Gary, if you're listening to this, you know why. It was Gary's an old friend, a Chicago improviser friend. He's a playwright. He's a director. You've heard him on the podcast before. He's the one who said, God, it'd be great if you just took some questions, just an improvised bit. And I thought that was a fantastic idea. And Reed, you took some convincing on that. But it was, I think one of the selling points was that, look, we take questions in interviews all the time about stuff. And when we don't know the answer, we make it up. And it's always fun. So walking that high wire, the audience really respects that. And neither of us, or any of the three of us, have ever done anything on as high a wire as when we used to, we used to pimp Matt Croak by saying, oh, you're asking about President Millard Fillmore. That's so interesting. Matt Croak, just during intermission, was telling us about that rap song he's written about Millard Fillmore.
And he'd go,
how does that go, Matt?
Oh, and he'd just curse us.
Yeah.
And then he'd go, Millard Fillmore was a president, and he was really a very big event, and I don't know, but he was awesome.
It didn't matter what he said, because it was on the spot. You knew he was making it up, and the audience...
So, Dustin, tomorrow night, you're on.
Yes. The most horrifying thing I've ever heard. I would pass out on stage.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your return discoveries via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans on our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Minute Man Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Darren Wilson. No reason, it is just random. Special thanks to Rachel Dratch, and thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 306/918 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less.